It's about race. It's about sexuality. It's about pain and addiction. It's about family. It's about crisis. It's about show business. And it's a cross between Behind the Music and the Joy Luck Club.
It's a community of choice. The energy here and the oneness that we all have, the celebration of quirkiness, is certainly a reason why I come here.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A bomb shatters Saturday night at the Bronx in Cape Town. Midwestern men network with nature, and from the bottom to the top with all-American fag hag Margaret Cho. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Chase Schulte.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 26th, 2000. Saturday night festivities at Cape Town's The Bronx Gay Bar turned to terror when a car bomb exploded outside, shattering windows and injuring five people. None of the injuries were considered serious. It's Cape Town's second bombing of a gay bar in less than a year, following the November blast at the nearby Blah Bar. But it's not only a problem for gays. The Western Cape has suffered a total of 16 bombings in the last 2 years. Police have had little success in identifying perpetrators, although right-wing vigilantism is widely suspected. Ronald Lowe of South Africa's National Coalition for Gay and Lesbian Equality said, "It would be short-sighted of the gay community to feel that we are the targets when there have been so many bombs not directed at gay venues. This shows a need for all communities to work together to find the culprits, not to withdraw into our little cliques." A statement from Annie Leet, director of the Triangle Project, called on all the people of Cape Town to reject the reactionary forces and hate that lie behind this act, but cautioned the gay community to be extra vigilant and aware so that we can protect our community from acts of violence such as these.
Violence drove a young Mexican gay man whose gender presentation is feminine to flee to the U.S., where this week he was finally granted asylum by a federal appeals court in California. Giovanni Hernandez Montiel, now 21 years old, had been ejected from school, forced to undergo so-called conversion therapy, thrown out by his family, assaulted by strangers so badly that he required hospitalization, and continually harassed, detained, and beaten by police, who also twice sexually assaulted him. When Hernandez Montiel filed for asylum in the U.S. in 1995, the immigration judge accepted that he had been persecuted, but believed Hernandez Montiel could avoid that persecution if he simply changed his feminine dress and manners. The Board of Immigration Appeals agreed that Hernandez Montiel was persecuted not for his homosexual orientation, but for his gender presentation, which it also believed he could change. But this week, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals threw out those rulings, stating that this case is about sexual identity, not fashion. The court accepted that Hernandez Montiel's female sexual identity is immutable because it is inherent in his identity. In any event, he should not be required to change it. Transsexual attorney Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights called it a groundbreaking decision and a powerful recognition of the links between sexual orientation and gender identity. Although the U.S. has granted asylum from homophobic persecution since 1990, this was the first time a federal court affirmed that practice, and the first asylum case in which a federal court recognized sexual orientation as an immutable characteristic.
But while Hernandez Montiel has found a haven in the U.S., there's a new outrage for his compatriots back in Mexico. By a decision of the City Council of Aguascalientes, the Ojo Caliente beach has been posted with a sign prohibiting access to dogs and homosexuals. The city's director of regulations, Jorge Alvarez Medina, confirmed to La Jornada newspaper that as long as he holds his post, he will not allow access to homosexuals. The exclusionary policy was strongly denounced by leaders of two mainstream community organizations, the Council of Non-Governmental Organizations of Aguascalientes and Hagamos Juntos Un Pueblo Nuevo, or Let's Make a New Town Together. They attributed this and other local anti-gay actions to the power of the right-wing pan-political party in Aguascalientes and said that similar situations are occurring in other pan-controlled municipalities.
Exclusion of gays from the Boy Scouts of America was protested with coordinated demonstrations in 36 cities in 21 U.S. states this week. The National Day of Protest was organized by Stephen Koza, a non-gay 15-year-old who has already been protesting the Scouts' discriminatory policy for more than 3 years and who recently resigned from Scouting after earning Eagle rank. His internet-based organization, Scouting for All, has collected nearly 55,000 signatures on a petition to change the national policy, and he went to the Scouts' national headquarters in Irving, Texas, to deliver them. He had hoped to arrange a meeting with Scouting's national leadership, but instead was turned away by a security guard. A secretarial worker promised to pass along the petitions. Most of the demonstrations held outside regional Boy Scout councils across the country were quite small. One of the largest was in Bloomington, Indiana, with about 100 protesters. But the point is being made. Local governments, United Way charity boards, and even major corporations across the U.S. are reconsidering their policies on supporting a group that discriminates.
But on the television phenomenon of the year, the one man who was never voted off the island is the one open gay. Before a viewing audience of 58 million people, 6.5 million in Canada, Richard Hatch became the million-dollar winner of the so-called reality show Survivor. To win, he had to outlast, outwit, and outplay 15 other contestants on a sparsely equipped island off Borneo for 39 days, and he did. A management trainer, Hatch went in with his eyes on the prize and quickly developed a voting alliance that systematically eliminated the competition, while others took weeks to recognize that the politics of the situation were the key to victory. Hatch's three voting allies all ended up in the money-winning Final Four with him. While Hatch's gamesmanship made him unquestionably the star of the show, as well as its winner, he was portrayed throughout as a scheming villain and was hissed and booed by non-gay audiences everywhere. Immediately after, the last seven outcasts voted 4-3 to give him the victory over runner-up Kelly Wigglesworth, a telephone vote showed viewers disagreeing by more than 2-1. Aside from his strategy, Hatch distinguished himself as a uniquely successful spear fisherman and an enthusiastic naturist who spent much of his time on the island unclothed. Asked on the Survivor's reunion program what he would do with his $1 million, Hatch said,
"There are a couple of things I've wanted to do. One main thing is to start an outdoor adventure program for troubled teens, something like I went on when I was 18 years old. And it's a goal that I've had for a long time."
Hatch also won a sports utility vehicle, a year-long endorsements contract with Reebok, and a remarkable measure of celebrity.
Celebrity lesbian couple Ellen DeGeneres and Anne Heche shocked the world announcing their breakup. There's been no further word from either one in the week since they released a joint statement saying, "Unfortunately, we have decided to end our relationship. It is an amicable parting, and we greatly value the 3.5 years we have spent together. We hope everyone will respect our privacy through this difficult time." But that was not to be because of a peculiar incident involving Heche on the same day. She appeared at the door of a private residence in rural Fresno County, California. Luckily, it was the home of a fan of Heche's movie 6 Days, 7 Nights with Harrison Ford, who welcomed her in. Heche made herself quite at home, taking a shower, borrowing a pair of slippers, asking to watch a video, and showing no sign of leaving. Apparently, her car had run out of gas, and she'd walked about 1.5 miles to the house. The fan said Heche showed no sign of illness or intoxication, but the fan called sheriffs to help. One deputy wrote that Heche said she was God and would take everyone to heaven in a spaceship. The sheriffs took her to a hospital where she was examined and released. Heche arrived in Toronto for a movie shoot as planned, just a little later than scheduled. The film's director, Mark Berg, told reporters she is working and happy, attributing the strange interlude to sunstroke.
A bit of showbiz sparked much controversy in Australia this week. Word leaked out that plans for the closing ceremonies at the upcoming Olympic Games in Sydney would include men in drag, causing religious right leaders and talk show callers to sputter in rage. Olympics Minister Michael Knight explained that part of the massive celebration was a salute to Australian cinema, and that the drag queens would be reenacting scenes from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. That 1994 cult classic is second only to Crocodile Dundee as the top-grossing Australian-made film of all time. Anywhere from 40 to 200 men will be involved, some wearing the Oscar-winning original costumes from the film. Conservatives were less than impressed by this explanation, but the Sydney Olympics Organizing Committee has already approved the show, and Ceremonies Director Rick Birch has no intention whatever of changing it. Sydney's drag entertainers are thrilled by the opportunity for what they believe to be the first representation of gays at the Olympic Games.
And finally, at a Los Angeles Dodgers baseball game this month, at least two couples in the stands celebrated the home team's home runs with affectionate kisses. But while no one thought twice about the heterosexual couple's smooches, someone complained to stadium security about lewd behavior because of the identical actions of lesbian couple Meredith Cott and Danielle Goldie. They were quickly surrounded by security guards, ejected from the stadium without even being allowed to collect their own belongings, and told never to set foot back on the premises. This was devastating and heartbreaking for the two lifelong fans, and they engaged a lawyer to sue the ball club for discrimination. But Dodgers president Bob Graziano met with them to work out a settlement instead, and part of that agreement was that he make a public apology.
Meredith and Danielle, I'm sorry that you weren't allowed to return to your seats. It troubled me a lot. One of the flyers that I saw being circulated, it says it's our stadium too. It is your stadium too. It's everybody's stadium, and everybody should feel welcome at the stadium.
The Dodgers will also be donating 5,000 tickets to games next season to gay and lesbian organizations.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 26th, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
The star of the new movie, I'm the One That I Want, has a few well-chosen words about television, addiction, and comedy.
I felt like if I died of a drug overdose, that I was marginally famous enough that drag queens would dress up as me.
Later in the program. It's not a political event, it predates circuit parties, and it draws gay and bi men to an intentional recurring community in the U.S. heartland every year. The recent Midwest Men's Festival was the 19th annual gathering for getting back to nature and networking with friends old and new. Reporter Buck Rowland was there.
Tucked away in the fertile rolling hills of northeast Kansas' Leavenworth County, the 19th annual Midwest Men's Festival was held at Gaia Retreat Center. The festival, which ran 9 days, is a gathering of men from around North America, including Canada. Attending were predominantly gay and bi men and their children, as over 150 men gathered in an intentional community to play, grow, heal, and feel safe.
How far did you come to be here?
I came from Minneapolis. This is my third year. First year, I was only there for a night. And I thought I should come back, so I brought my roommate last year, and we're here this year. It's a community of choice. It's a community that we all work towards. The energy here and the oneness that we all have, the celebration of quirkiness is certainly a reason why I come here.
Bonds with the land at the Gaia Retreat Center in Leavenworth County go beyond that of time and years. They go into the spiritual.
The only thing I need you to do is just state your name, whichever name you want to be known by.
It's going to be the Men's Festival, so I'd have to say Bad Fairy.
Okay. And Bad Fairy, where are we going now?
We're going to navigate this washed out zone.
In the dark.
In the dark.
With a flashlight.
And I need to bring this back with us.
Taking the wheelbarrow?
Yeah, we need a wheelbarrow down below for something. I'm not sure what. We're doing the sweat lodge. Came about because so many of us were dying.
Mm-hmm.
HIV primarily. You can come here and have this quiet, sacred space and your memories and access to it. And that's, anyway, this space is also where we do the sweat lodge. Again, it's the way it started was about bringing a rock of some sort, carrying it through this path and leaving your burden, so to speak, at the circle. And then the circle resulted from all these rocks. Having a sweat here gives, I think, it helps complete the circle. And people discover things in their sweat that help them navigate new terrain in their lives. These are the stones that the people had brought down where they left their burden. Each stone was brought down. Clarity did the first one there. And then I brought one for my husband who died and one for myself. In making the circle when we first decided to do this.
Has Midwest Men's Fest been helpful to you in dealing with that loss?
Key. It's been key. And not dealing, you're going to deal one way or the other. This preserved quality of life through the grieving process in a way that I had no idea was possible.
Around here I go by Tom T. Gardner. The T stands for the, so I guess my middle name is the. Basically tried to incorporate some symbolism that fits into just about every religion. It's laid out in what you call a medicine wheel or a Celtic cross. The original gardener here was named Flora. Kind of his fairy name. He basically had a single ring with some herbs in it. The little square area fenced off with barbed wire and that. He ended up dying from AIDS. And this is Flora's garden. And I was out looking for a statue and found this one. Got it back here and then discovered the statue is also Flora, the Roman goddess of blossoms in springtime.
During the 9-day event, many different activities are held, from disco night to an auction to raise money to the No Talent Show.
Everybody here does some community service, though, while they're here.
I never have. There's a first for everything, I guess.
Well, how nice. We're going to have fun. And are you dressed for trash hauling?
This is trash hauling. You must wear a leopard print trash hauling hat, cowboy, rolled up on the sides, and the large black with red and yellow and blue primary color sundress. Works well.
Okay.
With the appropriate sandals. Must have the appropriate footwear.
Circle is an optional but encouraged gathering that happens once or twice a day, generally around breakfast or dinner, depending on ferry time and what's going on with meal preparation. It is in Circle where duties are described, volunteers are solicited, and announcements made. The mood, theme, and style with which Circle is conducted depends on any one of the men who facilitates. Any man in attendance at the Midwest Men's Festival is welcome to facilitate a circle.
Circle, bunch of gay men, bi men, queer men, together talking about whatever they feel like talking about. It's facilitated by someone. Very often the conversation gets to be a bit personal, like, how has your year been? Describe what's been going on. It's a great place to catch up with old friends that you haven't seen all year. And I get a sense that this is who is an intentional member of this community.
Dance with me, sing with me, hold me in your strong arms.
Purple towns of healing, faggot got fairy dust. My love, come to me, come to me.
My name is Sister Claire Compassionata. I first came to this community kind of on a fairy tale journey. The blessed parts of this gathering is that it's a men's gathering, and that you can hold yourself in some sacred space that's just a queer male space, or perhaps a bi male space or whatever, but a man's space. I certainly do see myself as a sacred clown in this community, and as a sister, what my intention is to bring to this land is some of the importance, I think, of our mission as Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to expiate stigmatic guilt and to promulgate universal joy, and that's certainly for the collective enlightenment of all of us.
When she's on her best behavior, don't be tempted by her favors, never turn your back on Mother Earth.
I'm Buck Rowland. Co-producer and sound engineer is Brad Cable.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Margaret Cho's 1995 sitcom All-American Girl was a first for All-American TV, where the depictions of Asians and women are somewhat narrow, to say the least. The show's demise sent Cho into a sex, drug, and alcohol-induced tailspin, but she's turned herself around and her comeback stage show is a sellout success. A lot of Cho's story is included in her hilarious new performance film, I'm the One That I Want, but she also shared some of it in conversation with This Way Out's Steve Pride.
I had sex with a woman on the ship. I went through this whole thing. I was like, am I gay? Am I straight? And I realized, I'm just slutty.
Introducing Miss Margaret Cho. She's the Asian ballet girl who's got much to show. She kind of looks like Connie Chung, but in her own slutty way.
Where's my parade?
It's Margaret Cho. Margaret Cho. It's Margaret Cho. It's Margaret Cho.
Tell us about the new and exciting film, I'm the One That I Want.
I'm the One That I Want is the film version of my stage show, and my stage show is about my experiences doing television. I had a television show some years ago called All American Girl, and it was the first Asian American family on TV. And it was a really difficult experience for me, being somebody that's so not in the mainstream, to be suddenly thrust in the mainstream. And, you know, the show is about what that was like and how it really was very hard, how we really have narrow visions of what women should look like in the entertainment industry, how we have a really narrow vision of what women should be like, and how we have a very narrow vision about what Asian Americans are in the national consciousness. And so it's about race, it's about sexuality, it's about pain and addiction, it's about family, it's about crisis, it's about show business, and it's a cross between Behind the Music and the Joy Luck Club. I think that this film is important because of the fact that we're seeing somebody on screen that we never see. You know, I'm a woman. I'm an Asian American. I am a gay and lesbian activist. I am a woman of size. I am all of these things. And I really wanted to do that, to make a film, just because it's somebody that just never gets to see themselves.
What are the questions that people ask you most?
People ask me, you know, who has the biggest in Hollywood, things like that. I don't really know that. People ask me what my mom is really the way that I portray her in my show, and she really is. She's very much a character. She's very much exactly how I portray her in the film and in my shows.
Your film is not only very funny, but it's very poignant. You talk about some really bad times, mm-hmm. The sitcom.
I just was so insecure and so afraid of making a mistake, you know, because I'd grown up not seeing Asian people on television, because I felt fat, because I felt like I was sexually somehow perverted. There was this inferiority complex that was so deeply internalized that I didn't even know how to address it. I didn't even know that it existed there. The enemy lived inside me and I had no idea, and it would just eat me up constantly. I was just so insecure on set. I was so afraid of making a mistake because I thought that I was wrong anyway for the part to play myself, so that I should really be on my toes. And that's why when they came to me to tell me to lose weight, I lost it immediately. When they came to me and told me not to talk about my drug use and my experimental sexuality on stage, I stopped doing it. I completely fell in line because I was so afraid of the powers that be. I was afraid of not getting the approval. I was afraid of losing the show. I was afraid of losing the minimal fame that I had. All of the stuff that didn't really make sense, because the TV show would not have existed without me. And I was a star, and I never acknowledged that because I was so insecure. When the show was over, I felt as if it was my fault. I felt like I had just not fit into the blossoms of the world. You know, at that time, there was like Blossom, and then there was like all these different shows that I was not innocence. I was not cleanliness. I was not white. And I just fell into this pit of drugs and alcohol. I really wanted to try to make it campy somehow. I felt like if I died of a drug overdose, that I was marginally famous enough that drag queens would dress up as me. Like, you know, there would be like this sort of tragedy surrounding me. There would be a kind of Valley of the Dolls mythology that I could live on in camp, you know, and that I thought that would be my goal. And I was incredibly destructive for many years. And part of the reason was is because I was so hungry, and I didn't eat anything for about 4 years. So I just drank alcohol and used drugs instead, you know, so that was definitely part of it. And I just needed to fill up this void that I imagined was inside me, which actually I realized was not there at all.
You're at a wonderful place now. You're as big as ever. I mean that in a nice way. I don't mean that in...
See, but again, it's like, it's the insecurity that surrounds people makes us careful to say things like that. Like, we shouldn't be. It's like, I love that you say that. I think that's great, because I feel as big as I've ever been. And physical size is as joyous a thing as emotional size, as love size, as all of, you know, like, we should embrace it. I think it's really important to embrace it.
You are a self-identified fag hag.
Yes.
What are the requirements to be a fag hag? And what separates a good fag hag from a great fag hag?
I am a fag hag. And I think that what being a fag hag means to me is really just a connection with gay men, really just a feeling of comfort, a sense of love and understanding. It's a very maternal thing as well. For me, it's just, you know, it's very simple. It's who I am. It's who I live with. It's who I love, who I hang around. A good fag hag and a great fag hag. Well, I think that all fag hags are great. I don't seek greatness. I am greatness. You know, we are all great in our own way. We all have different things to offer. I would say a good fag hag or a great fag hag, they all have certain things in common. They always drive their own car to events because they know that all the guys always hook up with each other at the end of the night and they're always stuck. So they always drive themselves. That's a great fag hag. That's a sign of a girl who knows. Great fag hags know how to bargain and are really good at a flea market, say at the Rose Bowl. They can always haggle down prices very well. A great fag hag knows how to throw a great brunch. A great fag hag knows when to hold them, knows when to fold them. So we're all, but I think we're all great. Knows when to walk away, knows when to run. When is that the gambler? I don't know.
This has been a conversation with Margaret Cho. Her new film, I'm the One That I Want, will be coming soon to a theater near you. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Chase Schulte, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Andres Duca, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Buck Rowland, and Brad Kaler, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Some of the music you heard was performed by Martin Gore, Skank and Pickle, and from the movie soundtrack of Grease. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon, and we thank you for listening on WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, KPFA Berkeley, California, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.